We know he continues to attempt to gain access to additional capability, including nuclear capability. There is a real debate how far off that is, whether it's a matter of years or whether it's a matter of less than that. And so there's much we don't know.
Saddam Hussein, in effect, has thumbed his nose at the world community. And I think that the president is approaching this in the right fashion.
Yep, there you go. But that was not an election year, see? Mike Reagan back with you, 1-800-468-MIKE's phone number. In a moment, Bill Roggio from the Long War Journal. Right now, let's go to the phones, take a couple of calls. John, Salt Lake City, you're up. Welcome.
Thank you. Great show, Michael.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why the Mormon Church can't categorically come out opposing polygamy and say that they were wrong in the past, but then it's right now, they're doing the right thing now, is because to do so would be to contradict what their founding prophet said, which was that polygamy was commanded by God in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Mormon Church originally practiced it, to when it was first founded, the doctrine is that God commanded them to do this. And so at most, what the Mormon Church can do is say, oh, these people are not commanded by God to practice polygamy, and so they shouldn't be doing it, and that it's wrong because they aren't commanded.
Well,
to do so.
What's happening is not only that church, but all the churches are being silent here. All the churches are being silent, not saying a word, fearful, hiding behind their pulpits, hiding behind their doors, being very, very quiet for fear. If we support the government going after them, they may come after us. Well, my church hasn't done anything wrong. I don't know if your church or anybody else's church has done anything wrong. But there's all different degrees of abuse. One, of course, is the sexual abuse, which I'm familiar with because I was the victim of sexual abuse. But there's another one. It's called mental abuse. And when you hold a woman who is not in spirit or harmony with you, and you hold her children and say they can't eat or they will be punished in some way until you come back into harmony, that is abuse not only of the spouse, the woman, but that's also abuse of the children. And nobody's talking about that except me, who had Carolyn Jessup on, you know, last week. And I'm going to go in a little bit and go do Larry King Live. And I'm going to replay that because we got so many emails from people. Could you replay that? We're going to replay it. Also, it was on my website at Reagan.com. Just go down to the bottom of Reagan.com, and we have the Carolyn Jessup interview also there. I think there should be hearings in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, have hearings about the FLDS, and do something to save the children and save the wives from basically being turned into Stepford wives like little tiny robots. John, great call. Thank you very much. Let's go to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Check in with another John.
Yeah.
Hi, John.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah.
First of all, I respect you as a human being, and I respect
Thank you. I appreciate
father
that.
A lot.
Thank you.
But we might not agree. When you said that Bush lies, people die about that, I don't think that he's a very good man. And I think he lies because...
Where'd he lie? Tell me where he lied.
He lies about a lot of things.
Give me an example.
All the time.
Give me an example.
Big oil is a lie.
Big oil? No, it's not a lie. No, big oil's not a lie.
And let me give
what's the lie, John? What's the
Bush
lie about big oil?
Our hometown, we were protesting.
John, what's the lie about big oil?
He's lying about the prices. They should investigate. He should be also indicted and investigated on war crimes too. He's a bad person,
John. You're out of your mind. What? You know, that's what's wrong with you. That's what's wrong with so many of you pal talkers. That's what's wrong with so many of you pal talkers. That's why I don't go there anymore. You're all nuts. You're all nuts. Let's go to Bill Roggio. Check in with Bill Roggio there at Long War Journal, somebody who is not nuts. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Bill?
Great. How are you, Michael? And thanks for having me back on.
You heard the caller, right? He lied. He lied about this. He lied about that.
You know, big oil, what? We don't have big oil companies, and oil companies aren't making a lot of money. I mean, this is what oil companies have always done. What's the big surprise there?
Yeah, what's the big surprise, and what's Congress doing? Congress isn't doing anything to stop it because there's no competition.
Yeah, look,
there's absolutely none.
You know, the federal government brings in over $2 billion. You know, big government, too. You know, is there a big lie there? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's all these big lies, big lies, big lies. Hey, there was a bombing today in Pakistan. What happened? Who did it and why?
Yeah, the bombing in the capital of Pakistan, in Islamabad, it occurred in a very secured area right outside the Danish embassy and right next to the United Nations development program. Secured area, bomber got through. They said he had diplomatic plates. Apparently wasn't a suicide bomber. Someone just parked a car and left, killed 8 and wounded 30. We have to remember that the big controversy with the Danish.
They're still upset about the Muhammad cartoons.
The Muhammad cartoons, right. And, you know, and I find it extremely ironic that they're very angry at the Danes for defiling the prophet Muhammad, so they kill fellow Muslims to attack the Danish embassy. But, you know, you won't see those arguments being made by Al-Qaeda.
No, they never make those arguments. I was telling a story earlier today about the fact you had two Christian priests trying, or two Christians trying to pass out Christian tracts in a Muslim area of England. Of course, you know, they're taken in and told they shouldn't do that. That's a hate crime, pushing out Christian tracts. I think Britain and the rest of the world's going to be in a lot of trouble if they think kowtowing to this group is going to make nice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we don't want to go out of our way of making enemies with people that want to be our allies, like in Iraq. I mean, you know, look, in a Muslim country, we had this situation where a soldier was passing out the, you know, religious coins. You know, you would think that at this point in time, 7 years into this war, that, you know, you would get it. But at the same time, we have to understand too that, you know, this is a culture that is extremely sensitive about these issues, but way oversensitive, and there has to be a reckoning on this point at some time. You know, a culture that's going to go ballistic over, you know, handing out some coins that have a religion, you know, Christian religious sayings, but, you know, at times we'll just, you know, turn a blind eye to suicide attacks. Now, look, I go out with the Iraqi army, and I spend a lot of time with them, and most of the Muslims I've met, as a matter of fact, all of the Muslims I've met in my travels in Iraq and in Afghanistan do not act this way, but there is a very, you know, virulent
Well, it's like anything else, Bill. And Bill Roggio, by the way, is my guest from the Long War Journal, who is embedded on a regular basis over there in Iraq. You know, it seems to me, it doesn't matter, you name the group, it seems to be the extremists who are driving the bus. You look at the gay community. What's driving the bus? The extremists within that community, as I say, extremists within the gay community give gays a bad name. You have extremists within the Muslim community who give, in fact, Muslims a bad name. You have extremists within the black community that give blacks a bad name. What do we do?
Yeah, you know, it's something we have to recognize. And I think, you know, what we have to do is we have to approach them. And when I say approach them, we have to approach this problem of saying, you know, this is a very intolerant attitude and you don't speak for all Muslims. But the problem is that doesn't really mean anything coming from us. This has to come from the Muslim community. I think that we have seen, you know, there's a lot of debate out there. Well, you know, we don't hear Muslims stand up. You know, they don't stand up against this. But, you know, in a lot of ways they do. In a place like Iraq, when Al-Qaeda, you know, in Anbar province, where the whole awakening movement took place, you know, this is the group that rose up, or the Sunnis that rose up against Al-Qaeda. You know, I think actions in a lot of ways can mean far more than words, and that's something that we are seeing in Iraq. You know, a lot of people say, you know, Iraq is a big mistake, it's a failure, but, you know, is it a real failure that we went into Iraq and that Iraqis and the larger Muslim world has seen what Al-Qaeda really wants to do to its own people? So I think this isn't going to be something that's going to be solved overnight. This is it's a long war, it's a long process, and I think that as Muslims become empowered and as they stop fearing groups like the extremists like Al-Qaeda, and let's face it, in the case of the Muhammad cartoons, they had a campaign, you know, in Afghanistan to start riots at a certain point in time. You know, they did this with the fake Quran flushing story. You know, so they have a very sophisticated media campaign. We have to counter it with our own media
campaign.
Well,
let me ask you a question. What do you think would happen if all of a sudden, for whatever reason, this would be deemed within churches a miracle, if both Democrat and Republicans were to come together and make a joint statement that we're not going to leave Iraq till we are finished in Iraq, and those people can, in fact, take care of themselves with a very small group of Americans to support them. What would that do in speeding up the end of the war?
Yeah, I think it actually, you know, look, at this point in time, we've had a very good effect. We are definitely on the upswing, you know, against al-Qaeda and as well as against the Iran and the Iranian-backed, what they call the special groups or the Mahdi Army. But one of the things that I've heard in my travels when talking to, like, tribal leaders, who these are the guys, you know, think of them as your local party bosses in the cities and towns. These are the guys that really put their clout on the line to cooperate with the U.S. or to cooperate with the Iraqi government and the security forces to provide security. And one of the things I always hear them say is, yeah, we want to cooperate, but you guys are going to leave here. You know, we watch your political debate. They do. You go into a home, they have, you know, the Arab news, you know, covers U.S. politics. I see it on the television. Some of them watch English news channels. I think it would have a, you know, I think it would pull those that are remaining off the fence, and it would show a very real commitment that the U.S. has towards, you know, to securing Iraq, to defeating al-Qaeda, to defeating the Iranian special groups in Iraq as well.
Yeah, I mean, because you've got Pakistan, Musharraf, what have you, you know, cutting deals with both sides because he's got to cover his backside, along with Maliki and everybody else.
Yeah, you know, the real irony is I would say the worst theater in this entire war right now is in Pakistan. I mean, when I say worst, it's al-Qaeda and the Taliban have built safe havens. We know that as of last summer, 29 contacts of mine, 29 training camps, and this later came out in the news, 29 training camps in North and South Waziristan alone, two districts, think of them, two counties in the Northwest Frontier Province. And that doesn't include all the other areas where they occupy. We can do very little about it, and the Pakistani government's cutting deals, and we have very little influence on the outcome of those events because we don't have troops there. Whereas in Afghanistan and Iraq, we can keep the enemy on the run as long as we show political
will. What would happen if we... pulled a number and took out one of the camps, just, you know, middle of the night, gone.
We've conducted these limited strikes on training camps. Throughout the years, we probably conducted anywhere from 6 to 10 camps like this. This year, we killed two senior al-Qaeda operatives, one al-Qaeda commander, senior commander in Afghanistan. Another one was an al-Qaeda commander who ran their foreign or their external operations, so attacks against the West or the U.S. But the problem with Pakistan is that a real counterinsurgency campaign needs to be fought there, and the Pakistani government isn't willing to do this. I co-wrote an article with Daveed Gartenstein Ross at the Weekly Standard about just this very problem. It's in the magazine this week. And, you know, until the Pakistani government says we will fight the Taliban, you know, commit to fighting a counterinsurgency campaign, and the U.S. can provide us support. Look, we don't have the forces to go invade northwestern Pakistan, occupy it, and fight a counterinsurgency campaign. Because if we aren't willing to take casualties like we have in Iraq in 5+ years, we certainly, you know, we're going to take 10 times.
Well, wait a minute. Bill. Barack Obama says, you know, hey, he's president of the United States. He may do that.
You know, I get a lot of flack for this, but, you know, he's half right. At least he recognizes there's a problem that needs to be dealt with. The problem is his solution is just insane. I mean, Pakistan is a nuclear-armed state, and if you want to unite the people against the United States, go ahead and invade northwestern Pakistan.
Yeah, well, I don't think he gets it. Remember, he chairs the Foreign Relations Committee, hasn't had any hearings, so he's probably not aware of that.
No, his Pakistan policy is extremely naive.
Yeah, well, how about his other policies?
Well, I tend to just look at the war on terror myself. I leave domestic politics.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. I mean, if Iraq wanted us out of Iraq, wouldn't they say leave?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, this is up at the end of the year. I mean, last year they signed a deal with us. They extended the UN mandate for U.S. troops, and again this year they will do the same because they need us there. You did ask about Senator Obama's other policies, and I will answer that question. You know, the idea that you negotiate for the sake of negotiations, again, completely naive. You negotiate from a position of strength. This is how you...
Well, this is how the left's completely misinterpreting my father. I keep on using this when Ronald Reagan, you know, sat down with Mikhail Gorbachev. Remember, Mikhail Gorbachev called that meeting in Reykjavik. That's because we had absolutely bankrupted their country. And they were, you know, on their knees, and he needed to have some kind of agreement. And he tried to get Reagan to cave to SDI or Star Wars. My father wouldn't cave to Star Wars or SDI, and the rest is history.
You're absolutely right, Michael. I just could not agree with you more on that point. You know, the negotiations conducted with the Soviet Union were negotiated from a position of strength. We need to do the same with Iran. Right now, Iran believes that it has the ability to attack U.S. troops at will, to affect the situation in Lebanon by creating a an uprising in Lebanon and interfering with the government and creating an arrangement that the Lebanese government, you know, they held them hostage for almost half a year with picking a president. I mean, Iran feels that, and you know, it threatens to, you know, to do things. It raises the price of our oil. You know, until Iran understands that the U.S. and the West, the wider West, is not going to tolerate their activities, they're going to continue to do what they want.
All right, let me take a break. Come back to finish you up, Bill. I want you to tell everybody how they can find you. But after the break, Bill Roggio on the Michael Reagan Talk Show. And you can find, of course, the Long War Journal. He is on the hotline. More with him when we come back right after this.
This is the Michael Reagan Talk Show, the home of the Reagan legacy. Here's Michael Reagan.
Thank you very much, Mike Reagan. Back with you, everybody. I'm headed over to Larry King Live. I'm going to do a couple segments. Larry King Live with James Carville and Mr. Wexler, the congressman from Florida. That should be fun. And then, of course, you can find me at Reagan.com and all these other places right now. Bill Roggio on the hotline from the Long War Journal. Bill, how do people find you?
Longwarjournal.org.
Longwarjournal.org?
Yes, that's correct.
And you have things there every day.
Yeah, that's right. We cover the war on terror. I, you know, try and get independent reporters out into Iraq. I was in Mosul just through the month of March.
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. Let me ask you a question. What is it that when you get Arab and Jew together in America, they can actually, almost break bread together and have dinner together? You put them on a plane, you fly them to the Middle East, it's like they're throwing grenades at each other.
I haven't experienced that myself, but mostly I'm flying into Arab countries on my way.
But you understand what I'm saying. It's like, it's just like the nature of the beast. Once you land there, you got to be mad at somebody?
Possibly, yeah. I've actually experienced nothing but goodwill.
I mean, is there any hope for real peace in that area of the world, or is there always going to be war? I've said on my show for a long time, somebody called me up one day and said, when will there be peace in the Middle East? I said, when they're all dead.
You know, the Israel-Palestinian problem, I don't see a solution. I was in Israel last spring, just before the Gaza went berserk and Hamas took over. And the Israelis there are just so fatalistic on this point. They really have thrown their hands up. They have no idea how to solve this problem. They're willing to try anything. And they don't believe that any attempt at a solution is and I'm talking about journalists, the intellectuals, people in government are just sort of at the point where they're like 20 or 30.
Well, they've tried everything. I mean, what else can they try?
Look, they tried giving it up to them. They tried settling, they tried to give them their own state.
Let me tell you the biggest mistake Israel made, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. When they won the Six-Day War and got the Gaza and Golan Heights and all that kind of stuff, they should have redrawn their maps and called it Israel. They should not have allowed it to become occupied territory.
Yeah, I think that is a big mistake. I mean,
hey, when we won Texas and California with the Mexicans, we didn't name it occupied. We named it America.
No, they certainly give the Palestinians, the grievance there of being occupied. If they felt that they needed this territory and they won it legitimately in a war, then they should have incorporated it. But instead, they tried to have the best of both worlds, which was administer the territory but not call it their own. And the problem therein lies is that they want to be a Jewish state, and they would have to give the Palestinians voting rights. So, what were they going to do, expel all the Palestinians from the territory? They could have done that, but they would have had to be...
I believe the first Palestinians were the Jews, in fact. Boy, oh boy, what an interesting thing and what an interesting job you have. Once again, longwarjournal.org. Go there. We do each and every day. Bill Roggio on the Michael Reagan Talk Show. He'll be back again someday. So don't say goodbye. Just say au revoir. I'm Mike Reagan.